Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, climate change is leaving its mark on the Pacific Crest Trail, the roughly 2,600-mile route that stretches from Mexico to Canada through California's Mojave Desert, giant sequoias, and alpine meadows, is a bucket list adventure. But charred landscapes, persistent drought, they're changing the calculus for many. This hour, we'll talk with people who've hiked the PCT recently about what it looks like now, the adjustments they've had to make, and what it tells us about the changes our warming climate will bring to the storied trail in years to come. Join us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Thousands of people each year attempt to hike the 2,600-mile stretch from Mexico to Canada along the Pacific Crest Trail. 1,600 miles of it run through California, through our deserts and snowy mountain passes. It's always been a tough journey, but it's getting even tougher now because of issues related to climate change, raising questions about how long the option of doing an epic through hike will last. Have you hiked the Pacific Crest Trail or parts of it? What was it like for you? Did you notice changes brought by fires or drought? You can tell us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at KQED Forum, by emailing forum at kqed.org, or by calling 866-733-6786. Joining me now is Scott Wilkinson, Content Development Director at the Pacific Crest Trail Association, a nonprofit focused on protecting and preserving the Pacific Crest National Scenic Trail. Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also with us is Rowan Moore Garrity. Moore Garrity's recent piece for the New York Times is titled Heat, Water, Fire, How Climate Change is Transforming the Pacific Crest Trail. Rowan, really glad to have you on as well.
Great to be here.
And I'll start with you, Rowan. If I could, first, could you just talk about what's made the PCT such a draw for people every year, the allure of the trail, what it occupies for people in their minds?
Yeah, so the first thing that it's actually maybe helpful to start with is a distinction between the through hikers who are, like Cheryl Strayed's memoir, which was later adapted into the movie, those that the movie Wild take 3, 4, 5, 6 months to hike the whole way. And I think that's the much smaller group numerically, somewhere Scott will have real numbers, but, you know, say a few hundred to a little over 1,000 people who do that each year. But that's the group that I guess sort of drives the popular imagination of the Pacific Crest Trail, these people who put down their lives or decide to take on a massive challenge at a point of transition. And then, of course, because the Pacific Crest Trail threads its way through California, Oregon, and Washington through all these amazing parks and national forests, there's a much larger group of people who, whether it's cross-country skiing or hiking or trail running or mountain biking, will cross pieces of it. And so I think for both groups, it's just a hugely important feature of the Western wilderness. For the former, a way to see the whole thing at once, and for the latter, maybe a way to imagine a longer trip, even if you're just out with your kids on a Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, thousands attempt to hike parts of it every year, for sure. And if they do, they can be rewarded by some really incredible experiences, right, Rowan?
It certainly seems that way. I got out at the end of July and just hiked a 3-day section in far northern California, just south of the Oregon border. And it was amazing, you know, when I'd start these conversations with through hikers who you can usually kind of recognize because they're wearing packs that seem way too small for how far they're going, and they just look kind of very lived in. I'd start these conversations and say, you know, well, what made you decide to hike the Pacific Crest Trail? And I had one guy who answered that question by saying, well, 5 years ago, I stopped drinking. Mm-hmm. Another guy who was a cancer survivor who had recovered from this terrible journey with chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And when he found that walking was no longer quite so painful, decided to take on a challenge. And so really all over the trail, whether it's recent college graduates or people with, you know, really harrowing health journeys to relate, you hear amazing stories like that.
Yeah. And especially amazing because, Scott, it's hard to hike the trail. There are parts of it that are really, really hard before you even add in the effects of climate change. Can you just give us a sense of the kind of terrain and elevation hikers encounter?
Absolutely, yeah. The hiking the entire Pacific Crest Trail is an extraordinary feat of endurance, comparable to any other significant endurance attempt on Earth, really. As Rowan mentioned, every year we issue thousands of long distance permits to people planning to travel 500 miles or more on the trail. And typically not more than about 15% of those people actually go the distance and complete the trail. So it's very much a mental game, we find. Obviously, physical conditioning matters, but what we found is that your mindset matters a great deal more, just your ability to tolerate discomfort, to be able to really, in a sense, almost treat hiking like a job. You know, you have to get up every morning. Most long distance hikers will travel anywhere from 20 to 30 miles a day, day after day after day, which in and of itself is extraordinary. And yeah, the trail spans, as Rowan mentioned, a huge diversity of geological terrain, geological and terrain and ecosystems, everything from old growth forest to volcanic landscapes where you're walking for miles across lava beds, high mountain peaks covered in glaciers and snow, you name it. Hikers really have to be prepared for all of those different conditions.
So, Rowan, as you said, you, of course, hiked a portion of it, but also intercepted people who were hiking the whole thing so that you could get a sense of what the trail was like as of this past summer. And I'm just curious what jumped out at you in terms of some of the changes or just some of the way that the terrain looked as a result of recent events like drought or fire.
So the people that I spoke with just around, basically just north of Mount Shasta, which is maybe a good landmark for your listeners, had just come through about 140 trail miles that burned in kind of a mottled way in last year's Dixie Fire. That's the most trail miles that any fire has burned since the PCT was created. Mm-hmm. You know, that Dixie Fire is obviously the first fire that jumped the crest of the Sierra Nevada last year, which was sort of a major event in the hiking community just for what it signaled. So the people that I spoke to, a lot of them had very vivid impressions to relate, beginning with the question of, do I even hike this 140 mile stretch where it's going to be a lot of soot and very little shade and all these sort of standing charred trunks that you at least have to think about when you think about where to camp. Because if you have a windy night, you don't want to be sort of in the way of anything that could be settling or falling. And so, they said they had to walk farther apart in order to avoid kicking up black dust that would sort of cover them regardless of what they did. They had to be a little bit more careful about water sources, even though it's a pretty wet portion of California, just to make sure, you know, they got, intel from fellow hikers about, you know, what's up ahead or, you know, how far do I need to go before I can next refill my water bottles. And above all, and this is something that I really hadn't thought about until I was out there on the trail, shade is a massive variable when you're hiking. And if you're coming through more than 100 miles where most of the trees have lost their needles, even if they are going to survive, and the ground is black like soot, you're just going to absorb a lot more sun and a lot more heat. And that means you need to carry more water. It means your pace might be a little bit different. And so I think the thing that I just hadn't realized even setting out to do this story is all of the practical kind of safety considerations that would come up in light of fire and just hotter summers that we're beginning to see more of.
Yes. You also talked about a group of hikers that were willing to take water from a cistern of water that smelled and tasted bad and had a dead rat floating in it. Why did that jump out at you?
Well, experienced hikers know that I think rodents get into water sources and settings like that and probably always have. But the reason that stood out to me is, to begin with, this is in a section of the trail that's mainly desert. It's in Southern California. And it's already a section where people have to think about going, you know, let's say 10, 15, 20, even 25 miles between reliable water sources. And so cisterns like that are out there so that hikers can hike safely to the next spot, right? It's different from the sort of 1 gallon jugs that people often leave on the side of the trail just to help hikers, which are called water caches. You know, these are maintained, as I understand it, by the, you know, land managers, the public agencies that run these places. And it just said to me, you know, you'd have to make me feel pretty dehydrated and pretty thirsty before I started to, I guess, hold my nose and drink through the taste of a dead rat and, you know, worry about kind of crossing the bridge of what might happen to me as a result, you know, when I came to it. And so that just underscored very vividly the choices that hikers are making on trail, and that water really is the number one resource for survival. And that made it very clear that they think about it in those terms.
We're talking about the Pacific Crest Trail with Rowan Moore-Garrity of the New York Times, Scott Wilkinson of the Pacific Crest Trail Association, which is focused on protecting and preserving the PCT, and with you, our listeners, about whether you've hiked the PCT or parts of it, and if your trip was impacted by climate change, we'd like to know, or if you also just have questions about what it's like to hike it, you're welcome to call 866-733-6786 or to post your thoughts on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Gerard writes, I hiked 1,100 miles of the Pacific Crest Trail from early June to mid-September of 1974. In June, between the elevations of 10,000 and 13,000 feet in the Sierra, the snow was quite deep. We sometimes broke camp at 4 a.m. to enable us to walk on frozen snow. By 2 p.m., we were sinking up to our hips in wet snow and would call it a day. All that snow resulted in fast, turbulent, and cold creeks. Crossing them was the most dangerous part of the trip. Our leather boots were always wet, so blisters were a problem. I'm still amazed none of us ever got an infection from lancing our blisters with our Swiss Army knives. Wow, Gerard, thanks for sharing that description, and we'll hear more from you, our listeners, and our guests after the break. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about the war on Ukraine. Ukrainian troops continue to force Russia into retreat in occupied regions in the east and south. And in Russia, hundreds of thousands have been fleeing the country to avoid the draft. Protests are mounting. We talk about the war and its impacts on Russia. Today, we're talking about the Pacific Crest Trail and how, while it's never been an easy hike, climate change is making it harder. Rowan Moore Garrity wrote a piece for the New York Times titled Heat, Water, Fire, How Climate Change is Transforming the Pacific Crest Trail. And Scott Wilkinson is with us with the Pacific Crest Trail Association, which is focused on protecting and preserving the Pacific Crest National Scenic Trail. I'd like to bring into the conversation now Jasmin Ortega, who thru-hiked the PCT in 2019. Jasmin, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mina, for having me.
And you, when you thru-hiked it, while we talked about drought and fires a little bit more before the break, for you, it was the impact of extreme weather. Can you talk a little bit about what affected your hike when you did it?
Yes. The year that I thru-hiked, 2019, I was preparing for this hike months ahead, saving up money, buying my gear, but also watching the weather very closely, especially that winter. California, as you know, in January, February tend to be very, very wet months. So I was watching the news and the snowpack reports. And with every ensuing storm, my dread began to grow. Because we know that, you know, all this rain turns into snow that sticks around in the Sierras into, you know, well into spring and even summer.
Wow. And when did you do it? When did you leave?
I started March 29th. I began in Campo, California, which is the southern terminus of the Pacific Crest Trail, right next to the border fence with Mexico, and started hiking north.
Why did you choose that time? Why is that the time that makes the most sense for hikers a lot of times, especially if they're going south to north?
Well, I think for the average hiker, and, you know, there is no average hiker, but they tend to be either on the younger side or on the older side, you know, out of college or retired, and not a lot of people in the middle. But I considered my own limitations and my own, you know, pace and what I wanted to do on the trail. And I knew that I wasn't going to be doing 20 miles right off the bat. So March is not a good start time if you're hiking in a high snow year. But my reasoning was that I wanted to give myself time to, you know, get my hiking legs and get, you know, physically even more fit for the big climbs in the Sierra. And so, you know, I was still early. I left Kennedy Meadows, which is the gateway to the Sierra, on June 4th. Which was still, you know, there's a lot of snow on trail. And so I can relate to your caller, Gerard, who, you know, I had a very similar experience post-holing and starting early and really not covering that many miles.
Yeah, you finished on October 7th of that year of 2019. So that means your anniversary of when you completed it is coming up. Huh?
It is. And it has me all feeling all sorts of ways. Every year that goes by, it's very nostalgic time for me. And, you know, kind of remembering that really unforgettable experience. It's really
Tell us a little bit about it. What are the feelings that come up for you? What do you remember vividly?
Well, I want to talk to that woman who finished. I feel like we've had a pandemic, you know. So I went from living outside and sleeping, you know, on the floor and having complete freedom in the woods, to being, you know, like all of us, housebound, really, you know. So it was a very big kind of whiplash moment for me to kind of go to those extremes. And, you know, I felt just so not only free, but also I used my body and my mind, you know, not only the endurance feat that you talked about earlier, but just the problem solving, the adapting to the circumstances, the figuring out what to do when things don't go right. That, you know, I really missed that experience. That was really heightened by being in nature and being with people who are sharing the same goal as you are.
Wow. Let me go to caller Chris in Nevada City. Chris, you're on.
Hi, thanks for having me. And I, right off the bat, just want to say the woman who just spoke kind of hit the nail on the head, missing it and the connection and the discipline required.
Yeah, because you just thru-hiked it yourself?
Yes. My husband and I, we are, the other thing that makes it, we are on the older end of the spectrum. We had to retire to get that 5-month block of time that you actually need to get it. And so in our 60s, and weren't many of us, but it was magical. And I think we took about 10 years to plan, and in 2020 we were going to go, and then the COVID hit, so we delayed and finally got our permits. We started on April 13th because we want to start together, and they issue individual permits, and it's kind of an ordeal to get your start date, but we started April 13th, and we were lucky with the snow, and the snow levels were low. We live near Sierra, so we knew what we would be encountering, but the fires were a challenge. There was a fair amount of skipping and coming back to make up the miles, but if anybody in their 60s is thinking of doing this, I highly recommend it. Mm. It was one of the greatest things we've done.
Well, congratulations, Chris. What an accomplishment. Thanks. As well. Vicky tweets, fun. My friends and I backpack every summer in Desolation Wilderness and take day hikes along the PCT. Seeing so many burned trees this year from the fire that started just weeks after we left last year was devastating. We wonder how long we'll be able to backpack there. Scott, a couple of things are coming up for me based on what Hasmin and Chris are saying and also what Vicky is tweeting here. Well, first of all, I understand that the time of year can be a really important that you leave to do it, especially if you're going south to north, can be really important with regard now to fire and trying to avoid what is usually the worst of the fire season. Can you talk a little bit about how that calculation takes place, especially now with more and more wildfires?
Yeah, well, you've probably heard that traditionally in the distant past now, fire season was generally considered late summer, perhaps right. July or August through September or October. Now, many people are saying that fire season is not only longer, but in essence, year round, depending on what part of the country you're in. So this is definitely kind of a new reality, I think, for everybody. And of course, the important thing to keep in mind with all of this is that, you know, the increased likelihood of a through hike ending wildfire, for example, is a direct result of climate change. And climate change along the PCT can't really be fully described by one or even a few generalizations because of all of the different ecosystems the trail traverses. So the impacts from climate change are really going to be as diverse as the trail is itself. But two of probably the greatest changes that are going to affect the hiker experience along the trail are snow loss and temperature rise. As we move more into the future, we are going to be seeing more years in which there is lower and lower snow levels up in the Sierras and the higher elevations along the trail. And then, of course, also, it's going to get hotter. And as we move farther into the 21st century, the likelihood of people having to hike in 100 degree plus temperatures will continue to climb. All of that being said, I think that one of the things that we've been trying to communicate to folks a lot, and Hasmin referred to this when she talked about the challenge of just trying to figure out, you know, your strategy from day to day when you're doing a thru hike, is that, you know, what we've been emphasizing is that it's not really so much a question moving forward of whether or not people will be able to hike the trail. It's really a question of adaptability. And we believe that in the future, hikers are simply going to have to be more flexible. They may need to flip-flop more, which is a long-distance hiking term for hiking perhaps a southern section of the trail and then flipping northward to hike a northerly stretch of the trail and then perhaps even flipping back southward again. Those types of hikes are going to become increasingly common. And we also may find more and more people doing what we call section hiking the trail, which really in many ways has its own advantages, because when you section hike a trail like the PCT, you can pick and choose what time of year you'd like to hike a given section of the trail and really try to pick it as far away from fire season as possible, again, depending on what part of the trail you're on. So I think the overall trail experience will remain phenomenal well into the future, but it's definitely going to require a lot more flexibility and more adaptability on the part of hikers.
Hasmin, I imagine, though, that there's something about saying you did the through hike that maybe matters a lot, maybe to purists, but I'm just wondering. I'm sure what Scott, what Scott is describing is incredibly rewarding. But I'm just curious.
Well, you know, there's trail culture, you know, and a lot of opinions and the purists and traditionalists who want a continuous footpath, uninterrupted, northbound, usually. But like Scott said, I think, you know, we will have to adapt to the changing conditions, and the flip-flopping is a lot more common on the Appalachian Trail. So, and I think it will be more accepted and common on the Pacific Crest Trail. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, everybody's goals are different. A lot of people start with the intent of doing the whole trail, but then find they don't like hiking, or they don't like camping, or they don't enjoy the experience. You would be surprised, you know, how many people just decide to go and then figure it out. And, you know, that's great. I think everybody should try it. It's an amazing experience. So, you know, I think whatever people's goals are, you know, that's, I think that's great. Any time in nature is a good thing. So, we will have to consider flip-flopping, and also just a word on southbound hikers. You know, southbound wasn't as common in recent years. It's becoming more common on the PCT. But I think it will become harder to go southbound because they usually start later than the northbound hikers. They usually start June, July, because there's snow in the Northern Cascades. And, you know, if you start at that time, you kind of run into, you know, the Sierras in August or even some September when there's a lot of fires. And just last year, the U.S. Forest Service closed the forest around Labor Day. And I personally know a southbound thru-hiker last year who ended up leaving the trail altogether because, you know, she couldn't, you know, skip around. So it will force hikers to rethink and to not have the expectation that, oh, I want a continuous footpath. If not, it's not going to be a success. I think that they need to, you know, be ready to adapt and change your plans.
Well, let me go to caller Lego in San Francisco. Hi, Lego.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, for one, I'm a fan of Scott. So I hiked Novo northbound in 2017. That's what they consider that year, that year of fire and ice. So that was a record snow year in the Sierra. And there was also record heat waves. So I remember going through like the Mojave right before the Sierra, and it was 120 degrees every day, and you got like 20 mile stretches of no water. So with that, it's like creeks turn into rivers, and you got to cross those. And that year, I remember there's two young women drowned crossing those rivers. And then with the fire started when I got into Oregon, there were so many random small fires on trail. There was just almost no way. You would have to like hike and then hike back, hitch around it, and do that several times. So I ended up just hiking part of the Oregon Coast Trail and going back up the Cascade Locks, where we got evacuated from the Columbia River Gorge fire. I don't know if that was a huge fire. I don't know if you remember that, but, wow. And then even about 40 miles into Washington, there was another fire. So we had to hike back, hitchhike around that. And I was able to finish, but it wasn't a through hike. It was more of like a long distance section hike. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering how frustrating it got for you, Lego, when you had to keep encountering these things, you know?
You know, I kind of, for me, I just had 6 months to go on this hike. And, you know, that I didn't know if I'd ever get another chance to do something like this. And I just, you know, I just kind of went with it. After like 500 miles, like mentally and physically, you know, I'm like just ready to, you know, I'm in, you know, hiker mode. But I did want to bring up, so I just got back from the Colorado Trail, and they're going through the same issue in Colorado. So with the, like, extreme drought, and then also the spruce pine, they have a beetle that's kind of doing the same thing, the trees out here in California along the trail. So you talk to a lot of locals because you got to hitchhike in the town and back the trail to resupply, and just talking with the locals, you know, they said it's been going on for years, and it's like a big concern even as you know that far east in Colorado. And so it's really going on these through hikes is really, for me, I get to see things with climate change that a lot of people maybe can't see visually, like happening in front of them, but you know, I'm able to see, and it is really concerning.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Rowan, one of the things that I felt as I read your pieces, both the Heat, Water, Fire piece, but also your notebook, Food in a Bear Canister, A Reporter Hits the Trail, that piece as well. I wondered if you yourself experience or you imagine that it is harder to lose yourself in that sort of meditative state of being in nature when there are sort of these increased issues, dangers, and changes to the landscape brought by climate change?
Undoubtedly, that's true for some hikers. I'm remembering now an interview I did with a guy who's been section hiking the PCT in 500-mile stretches. And he said almost the opposite, not that you're not thinking about climate change and thinking a little bit about the sort of globalized anxiety that our era can produce, but that you are hiking so far every single day that you live kind of a stripped down existence where it's just, where can I sleep? Where can I eat? Where can I rest? Where can I drink? And so obviously the practical considerations of fire and smoke and all of that will enter into the equation very quickly, depending on where you are. But I think for a lot of hikers, the physical task is so daunting, and maybe this is something Hasmin can speak to, that you can't help but get into that meditative state.
Well, that's good to know. I have a couple more comments that I want to read. Scott writes, great segment, any winter ski crossings of the PCT? Can you talk about that and how climate change is affecting it? Scott Wilkinson, winter ski crossings of the PCT?
Well, to date, there has been one through ski, I guess you would call it, of the PCT. And that was done a couple of years ago by Justin Lichter and Sean Forey. They've actually written about this. And it was an extraordinary effort on their part, done entirely on backcountry skis. But otherwise, I would say that there are not any, this is not a popular thing through skiing the trail. That said, though, winter recreation is increasingly becoming a really fantastic sort of option for enjoying the trail, such as snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, things like that.
We'll have more about the PCT after the break. Stay with us, listeners. You're listening to Forum.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about hiking the Pacific Crest Trail this hour. It's never been easy, but climate change is making it harder, if not quite different. Rowan Moore Garrity has written about this for the New York Times in a piece called Heat, Water, Fire, How Climate Change is Transforming the Pacific Crest Trail. Hasmin Ortega has thru-hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, did it in 2019, and is also with us. Scott Wilkinson is with us as well, Content Development Director with the Pacific Crest Trail Association. And of course, you, our listeners. Let me go to Splob, who is on the line. And you can call 866-733-6786 if you want to call in as well. Splob and Martinez join us.
Yes, everybody has trouble with that. I had to finally put a sticker on my hat that spelled it out. Okay.
Is that your trail name or something?
It is. So I successfully did a northbound hike in 2015, and I feel very fortunate because it was smooth. Like, I just hiked the full 6 months, took my time, zeros and narrows, didn't get to Canada till October 26, which is unusual because it was a drought year, so that allowed me to do it. But there were fires. I just luckily missed a lot of them, and they didn't encroach on the trail to the point of full closures, where compared to like this year, I know people out there personally who skipped hundreds of miles because of fire.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing your experience. And yes, that is a big consideration and how things are changing. Jasmine Ortega, am I right that you also have a trail name and it's Flamethrower? You want to tell us the story behind that?
Yes, it is. You start trail families, you know, if you want to, right? Like, a lot of people go to hike solo, and I eventually had a trail family. You know, they kept trying to give me these names, and they were all kind of goofy. And, you know, you sign your name on a trail register now and then. So I didn't want to sign some silly name. And so I kept, you know, kind of squatting them, like batting off, like, no, I don't like that one. And then one day, you know, I was making breakfast, and I usually was the only one in my trail family who made coffee and oatmeal in the morning. But because I didn't want to leave camp late, you know, I was up at 5, and they would hear the blast from my stove. And so somebody asked, so you got a flamethrower there? And that sort of stuck. And so that's my trail name.
that's pretty awesome. Let me go to Lily in Redwood City. Hi, Lily.
Hi. I was also known as Late Start. That was my trail name.
Loving these trail names. So tell us about your experience. Yeah.
Yeah, so I set out to do a flip-flop through hike of the Appalachian Trail in 2018, and I was hiking with my partner of 7 years, and about 200 miles into the trail, we actually broke up, and I decided to continue on my hike, and sort of left him where he was and hiked 1,000 more miles by myself. And I just wanted to offer a few words of encouragement. I mean, climate change is really scary and the unknown of sort of the future, but through hiking, for me at least, was really about the smiles, not the miles. And everyone ends up hiking their own hike. And if you're considering doing a through hike and you're getting intimidated by not just the feet alone, but all of these things that can get in your way, to, you know, take a deep breath and keep going, because it's really worth it and it's really transformative. And it might not be what you expected it to be when you set out, but you get out of it what you need.
Lily, thank you. I really appreciate you saying that and for sharing your personal story, as well as just encouraging us to think about, even with all the kinds of changes that climate change is bringing and the challenges as well, that it is worth doing. Actually, Jasmine, this listener writes, I've always wanted to do the trail, but I am 50 and out of shape. How to think about taking the first step? What to start with? What would be your advice to this listener?
Start hiking. Start where you are. It is daunting to think about 26, 50 miles, you know, over 3 states. And it, when you think of the totality of it, it is very intimidating. But just start where you are, hike local, hike often. If you have access to a gym or even outdoors, try to, you know, work on strength training if you can. One thing that helped me a lot is that I'm also a long distance runner. I started running in 1999, a long time ago, and I run many marathons. And I think that the mental training, as much as the physical training, helped me to endure discomfort and to persevere, you know, just to know that, you know, things may be bad now, like they say, embrace the suck, but, you know, they will get better. And it's just a matter of, you know, being consistent with hiking or whatever, you know, physical training you're doing, and plan as if it's happening. I think a lot of people like to dream about it, but it ends there. It's a dream. But what are you? What step are you taking today to make it happen? How are you planning, you know, your finances? What are you going to do? You know, if you have a pet, you have to start thinking about all these things as if it's happening, because it is if you want it to happen. So don't let it stay as a dream. Take a step every day in that direction. You know, plan ahead, and make it happen. It's, you know, it does feel like a dream when you're there, but you know, if you take all of those steps, it really is possible.
And Hesman, you've talked about how it is actually quite a bit more expensive than people might realize to hike the Pacific Crest Trail. What should people keep in mind?
Well, it's not just about having the gear and also planning on any recurring bills you'll have while you're gone, but also on, you know, you have to pay for a hotel room. If you're, you know, you can share obviously with other hikers, share a room in town. You have to pay for resupply, for food as you go along. If stuff breaks, if your tent pole breaks, if you have to replace gear, you have to think about that. You know, there's all these expenses that that you have to think about. So there's the conventional wisdom on this is about $1,000 per month budgeted for a thru hike. So 5 month thru hike would be about $5,000, and that would be, you know, the what you have for the thru hike. And then if you're leaving your job, if you are looking for work after you're done, you have, you know, I recommend a cushion to have, you know, to kind of, you know, living expenses to get you through that period. And so it can be an expensive, you know, proposition. So, you know, those are things to think about. But again, I think, you know, it's it involves a lot of planning, but it is possible.
Are there changes, Scott Wilkinson, in gear in terms of considerations that people should make as a result of climate change that maybe wasn't as big a consideration before?
I wouldn't say that there are gear changes as a result of climate change. And the reason is simply because the microclimates that you experience across the 2,600 miles of the trail are so enormously varied to start with that, as you've probably already heard, hikers have to be prepared for anything from 100 degree plus days to sub-freezing nights at high elevation. So the main sort of development in gear, obviously the big story, is just the development of ever lighter gear. There are a lot of hikers that go ultralight. There's some that go ultra, ultra light, down to the point of just bare minimalism. Right. And it is absolutely true that the less weight you carry, the greater your chances of success are.
Yep.
But yeah, as far as climate change goes, though, no, I think hikers have to be prepared for everything anyway.
Well, Danny writes, talk about the role of trail angels on the PCT, people who make sure there's water or supplies on the trail. Rowan, trail angels?
They're great. I drank a Dr. Pepper when I crossed a paved road halfway through my little three-day jaunt and loved every drop. Trail angels are very often people who have a personal connection to the trail, either a dream of thru hiking or a story about thru hiking, or maybe a relative or a friend who has. And sometimes they're just locals who get into it because of something like a bad fire season, where you start to see all these hikers who are, you know, washing up in your little town and deciding, do I skip 500 or 600 miles forward and then hike the last bit to Canada and come back next year and things like that. And they're a really important part of the trail culture. You know, they bring a great spirit and the sugar and alcohol to the trailheads when hikers need it. But also, they are just 1,000 logistical quandaries that a thru hike entails that I think trail angels can help resolve. And they do so willingly and enthusiastically. Everybody you meet on the trail has a great story about trail angels.
Hmm. Well, yes. Let me go to caller Moon in Sebastopol. Hi, Moon.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll just piggyback off what was just said about trail angels. And I think there's so many interesting metaphors about climate resilience on trail, just in the way that we're all going to have to face climate change. There's certain sections, particularly in the desert, there's a section where there's just this individual who maintains these water caches that basically make these sections possible. And that's not a state agency. That's not a larger group. It's just this one man who's involved with the trail and maintains these water caches. So I think there's just a lot to be said about walking in the woods for as long as you do on trail. You see the way that the difference in land influences the climate so intensely, and the way that you just feel. And you just need to take that into consideration. So, it's interesting. It's a really interesting phenomenon. So,
you mean the differences that you're noticing as a result of the things brought by climate change?
Yeah. I think, you know, walking through a forested area where there's a lot of greenery, you see that basically it's even if it's a 100-degree day, if there's shade, it's something that's manageable. And for instance, in the Dixie Fire, that section I walked through, and like was mentioned, just the lack of shade changes your entire experience, and the temperature is just so different. So I think, that firsthand confrontation of climate change, as was said earlier in the program, is something that's left a lasting mark on me. And also, our ability to, I guess it's just the everyday changes that you observe, seeing it firsthand has made me think about how am I preparing for climate change just in my local community here in Sonoma County. So, that's a big consideration. And I think the other thing that was really interesting, it's been mentioned on the program already, the need to change our expectations for the trail. And for me, it was like the McKinney fire that broke out prevented me from crossing the California-Oregon border. And then there was a fire that broke out at the U.S. Canada border that actually prevented me from touching the northern terminus. And so the groups that I was with, we had a lot of really philosophical discussions about those are two points along trail that have a lot of significance, as obviously the northern terminus is huge, but even the California-Oregon border is the first state crossing that you have, and comes after 1,700 miles of walking through California. So there was a lot to be discussed as far as like the sadness of not having those moments. But I think there's that recalibration of like, I think our culture has a lot of goal-oriented, milestone-oriented mentality. And so to be with this group of people and to reflect on that we weren't going to get these milestone moments, I think, brought in this deeper discussion about what is valuable about this experience. Is it the achievement of it, or is it this connection with nature and this opportunity for forming a community outside of our normal lives, and the freedom and joy that brought to a lot of the people that I hiked with this year? So,
I really appreciate you saying that, Moon, and it's well said. This person, Ian, writes, I hiked the John Muir Trail section of the PCT this past summer. I started August 14, just after torrential monsoons wreaked havoc on the Death Valley Basin region, and finished on September 4th in Yosemite under the smoky conditions due to fires in the valley. All along the trail, there was a lot of erosion and debris strewn all over the trail, sometimes making it difficult to find where the trail was. The day we finished the trail, temperatures were estimated to reach 107 degrees in Yosemite Valley, descending from beautiful mountain meadows to a lingering haze of smoke hanging heavy in the hot air, made it painfully clear that the effects of climate change are going to upend a lot of our ability to recreate and enjoy some of the most pristine natural environments on Earth. Let me go to Kyle. Hi, Kyle, in San Francisco, you're on.
Hi. I am section hiking, but really intimidated about the changes that have occurred with the permitting system for the John Muir section, and wondering if you have any suggestions about how to go about that, if I just have to cross my fingers on the lottery, or if I should jump in halfway and then go further through Yosemite. Any thoughts?
Oh, okay. Let me ask. Hey, Scott Wilkinson, do you have any thoughts on that, on what Kyla's asking about the permitting, John Muir, so on?
Yeah, I don't have any particular answer for you, but what I can tell you is if you want to shoot an email to permits@pcta.org, my colleagues at the organization will be more than happy to answer that question for you. It gets fairly technical, which is part of the reason I'm reluctant to go into different options. So.
Yeah, but thanks. Well, let me go to this listener, Julia, who writes, Wild depicts one woman's solo journey on the trail. Did you meet any women trail hiking alone? Can you talk about the safety issues surrounding this? I'm very interested in attempting this, but need to reassure my family it's safe or at least a calculated risk. Sounds like a good one for you, Yasmin.
Yes, absolutely. I also hiked solo. I had a friend join me for a couple of days, you know, at the beginning, but you know, I hiked solo. Met people along the way. I actually had a hiking partner from Denmark. She and I decided to go through the Sierras together. And so, you know, for someone who is thinking about hiking the trail as a female, if they have family who are concerned for their safety, I would suggest that they carry a satellite beacon, like a Garmin InReach or something that allows their family to know where this person is, so that they can communicate. They can send a text every night saying I'm okay. And hikers, as they go through the trail, there's a signal, there's cell phone signal that they can call and stay in touch. And so I think that the trail is also a place where news travels quickly. So if there's ever an issue, the hikers tend to look out for each other and solve any issues that may arise. But there have been some cases of, a few years ago of a person was harassing a woman and, you know, or worse. And it does happen. You know, obviously society's issues, don't leave the trail altogether. But I think that hikers in general do a good job of looking out for each other. And there are ways to be safe and feel safe while you're hiking the trail.
And also, as we mentioned earlier, the Trail Angels. Cynthia writes, my brother went out on the PCT about 5 years ago, met a Trail Angel outside Grass Valley, and they've been living together ever since. Yasmin Ortega, Scott Wilkinson, Rowan Moore Garrity, thank you all for talking with us about the Pacific Crest Trail, the changes you're seeing, and the magic that also continues. Grace Wan, thanks for producing today's segment. Listeners, thank you for sharing your stories on Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.